Well, let's come to ourselves then. Ask yourself this question tonight, and I'll ask it of myself. What about your search for meaning? If Jesus has something to say to us in our world, well, he might have something to say to me. So you check it for yourself. Your search for meaning. It seems to me, at any rate, that it really is our basic search. Does my life today have meaning? Have I any really any significance? You see little kids, don't you, all the time asking this question. Just by their very action, they're intruding on your space and doing funny things and attracting your attention and your emotion because they want to make a difference. And they sometimes make such a difference you spend all day cleaning up after them. But whatever way, they're trying in a playground or anywhere around the place to find out, do I have a meaning anywhere? Can I do anything to this world? And we can remember our own childhood, but we can remember a little bit older too, probably in our adolescence, and earlier still, when the search for meaning became even more perhaps directed to maybe a mother. Do I have meaning for my mother? And if my mother doesn't think I have meaning, maybe it mightn't matter who else thinks I have, I'll be worried. Because this significant other person somehow is very important to me. Or a father. Other people can say you're a fine bloke, you're a great student, you're a good sport, but if Dad never says it, I don't know whether I am or not. Because the meaning of my life is bonded into that relationship very closely, and I'm only saying things you know just to bring memories maybe to you. You go to a school and this particular teacher, just one perhaps, becomes really important because you like him or her maybe. And if you're meaningful to that person, then you think, okay, my life has some meaning. Jesus answered that question, apparently, to Peter and to John and to Mary of Magdala and to a blind man of Jericho and to strangers along the way. Something about him, and that's what we've just read, he touched that thing and said, yes, your life does have meaning. And so he bonded in there somewhere with them and brought them alive. Could he do it to me? And what about my friends? What about my world that's searching for meaning? Going in all kinds of directions, trying all kinds of things. We've had an explosion, haven't we, in recent years, of information and of energy and of distraction, and everyone's going in splayed out in hundreds of directions. Why? Because we're not sure our roots, whether they've rotted in the ground or whether they're going down to the water or what, and we're trying all kinds of things. The world is, I would say, desperately searching for meaning. And we're caught in that too. Very like Jesus' world, which was broken, distracted, torn apart, war, Roman Empire, slavery, oppression, hunger, blind, lame, or read the Gospels. He did something to his world. Could Jesus of Nazareth, if we knew him, have something to say to the searchers of this world? Could I take that a further step? The search for meaning is where I'm just staying with you for a moment. What is that search? It seems to me that the search for meaning is really a search for love. I think they're the same thing. Because, as I've partly indicated, you can't sit in an armchair and work out your life has meaning for yourself. It's really a question you address to somebody else. Does my life have meaning for you? In other words, do you love me? And if you say yes, and if you do, and whatever your lips say, if your eyes and hands and decisions and presence and your words, say it, then I know my life has meaning for you. And then I can kind of come alive. It's a search for love, in other words, that we're on, I think, all of us, our world and my person. And again, when we look at Jesus, we'll do a lot more of this in 2 weeks' time, in fact, but I think it's obvious to all of us just at the beginning that what was significant about Jesus, what hit people straight on, was the quality of his love. When he loved people, it was extraordinary. It was so beautiful, so compassionate, so prayerful, so powerful, so faithful, that the love questions were not the questions that people were left with when they met him. How they could respond, maybe, but that he loved Peter when he said, you know, friend, that he loved Judas, that he loved the Mary of Magdala, that he loved the blind man, I think the Gospels obviously show us. And the early Christian communities, Acts tell us, they were noted how these Christians love one another. So the search for love, which is critical to all of us and to our world, is very much wrapped up in there in Jesus. Could he show me how to love? Is the question I'm asking if I got to know him. Could he show you? Could he show our world something about that? And now I want to go into a very much deeper question. That's the next step, I think. And I'll try and do it very carefully with you and hope I can be clear. I have to really ask you to reflect on your own experience and check this for yourself. I think that my search for meaning and my search for love, and therefore I think it will be true of yours and of everyone's, but I want you to check this, has no bounds to it. It's got no limits to it. It goes on and on and on and out and out and out. You can't love me enough. Thank you. And nor, I bet, can I love you enough. And there are times, very intimate times, and often very mysterious, and I'm not sure we'd all put the same words on them, but I hope I can find words that might say something to you. There are times when, yes, we experience the need for love and we receive it from a parent or a teacher or a friend or a little kid in the playground or a fellow student at university or heavens, all the different modes of love around. But I think there are other times when, now Ignatius of Loyola's got a word for it, he calls it consolation without a cause. One word for it, I don't know what words you can talk. If you read through the lives of all the saints and the ordinary people of our world, they talk about experiences such as this, where you experience being in love, being loved and drawn into love, but it's not by anybody that you can point to. It's an experience of mystery. It's an experience of being at home in the world. It's an experience of being loved just because I'm me, not by you or by mum or by dad, by life. And it's more than life. It's got a personal something to it. You might experience it one day when you just walk outside and you see a beautiful view and your heart just goes out, or in, I don't know what word, and you're caught in it. And at that moment, you just feel great. It might be a spring morning, and everything's just bursting with life, and there's little beads of dew hanging on the rose petals or something, and you just happen to go into the middle of it, and you don't know what to call it. I'm not saying we've all got the same name, but you experience being wrapped, caught, ecstatic. Is that okay, all those words? Somehow there, all together in that moment, and there's a peace, a joy, maybe a pain, there's all those things, but there's a sense that you just can't tie this experience down or locate it. It draws you on somewhere. It's awe, a feeling of awe. It's, I think, basically a feeling of being in someone's love. And I just have to almost leave it there. If that experience touches you, and I've had experiences like this, there are some people who seem to experience this all the time. They seem to live in the middle of it all. And maybe we're all living in the middle of it all the time, but we just forget, or we get distracted, or we get confused, or we don't know what words to put on it. But anyhow, I think I'm talking about an ordinary, everyday, common garden experience of humanity. We call it a couple of words, that experience I've tried to describe for you. An experience that might happen on your own. It might happen when your child is born, if you've had a child of your own. Or if you're a husband and you went to the birth of the child, when your wife gave birth to a child, you might have had the experience then. You might have had it when someone was dying that you loved in hospital and they seemed to be in a lot of pain and they gave you just a beautiful smile. And you were like, nothing can distract you at moments like that. You're just there. It can happen in a million ways. It can happen just as you walk outside and a little kid smiles at you. So I am really trying to talk about something very ordinary, but very deep and very total in our human experience. And that's why we use a word for that kind of an experience that I'd just like to draw your attention to. That word is the word religion. Not everyone will use the word this way, but this is the meaning of the word, and that's what I'm trying to share with you now. It's the experience I'm speaking about is a religious experience. The word religion comes from the Latin ligo, ligere, ligare, actually the first declension, or ligere, third declension, they're related. And it means to gather or to bind. It's used of wheat, say, in the fields, that you gather into a sheaf and then bind them. Religo means to gather back. It means to bind back. From being distracted and dissipated and thrown all over the place, you are gathered together, gathered back, bound back. Personally, if I capture that word again, when all your hopes and all your feelings, and maybe your subconscious as well, and all your dreams and all your pain and all those things somehow are gathered in that, just that moment when you're just there and you're all together. It's a religio, a religious experience. Or in a community, to go beyond the person and think of a social community. I imagine when the Aborigine elders gather their young bucks there and they're starting to train them in the dream time stories of their tribe, and they gather for a corroboree of initiation. That's a religious experience. A whole tribe, as it were, with all their past, the spirits of their ancestors, and the whole journey of their present moment is gathered in that corroboree experience. And they are all bound there. And the experience they're having is religious. Or when the Greeks gather in their amphitheatre and listen to the mythology of the Prometheus unbound or something, coming from the stage, and they're dreaming their dreams and feeling their deepest primeval kind of feelings, and they're all gathered there as a people, and the fact that everyone's there binds that community, doesn't it, into a religious celebration, a binding and gathering experience. And so with us, perhaps if I could capture your own, it might be an Easter vigil ceremony or something, when the candles are there and the story of the Exodus, and hopefully the experience is such that you too, with everyone you know there, and that's why it's so hard for us, may I say, in distraction, to have a socially religious experience, because there's always somebody not there. Our society doesn't experience much social religion, because if you're gathered, and he's not there, and she's not there, and they're not there, do you know what I mean? There's something missing from the experience. It's reaching towards, but it doesn't bind in. And if ever you've been anywhere to any religious ceremony when everybody that you knew was there, you'll know what I mean. It is a profound experience of common humanity there. I'm trying to hold a point with you, that our yearning for meaning and our yearning for love goes on and on and out and out, and it's a religious yearning. And so did Peter have a religious yearning, and so did the Pharisees, and they didn't know what was going wrong, and so did the high priests have this religious yearning. So does everybody have it. In that religious experience, it is another word, if I may put on it for you, it is an experience, and we rightly in English use the word God. This is very simple but basic, but I think really important. Somebody once chose the word God for the one in whose love we experience ourselves, or for the one who gathers us at deep levels together. Now, why the word, firstly? The word comes from ancient German roots, of course, and the oldest cognate Indo-European language that we now know is Sanskrit. And if you go through the various related cognate languages, you'll find Guto in Sanskrit, the hard G sound, and the T, which develops in Gott in German and then God in English. It means the one worshipped, it means the one called. The one called. And do you see how it links in with what I've been saying? That if you get to the experience of the person who calls out in ecstasy, who are you calling? When you call out in agony, who are you calling? When you call out in wonder and delight and pain and shock and for mercy and all the cries that arise from every human being in this world, every baby is calling out. Oh yes, the baby's calling for mum, but mum will only, I don't know much about being a mum, so, but tell me if I'm wrong, but I imagine mum will only satisfy the baby for about half an hour. The call goes out beyond mum, really. And dad's there. But even everyone is, does Augustine say, you have made us for yourself, now our heart is restless till it rests in you. There is this human experience of crying, calling in all kinds of ways. And the one called is God. We use the word God. We don't experience God. I don't want to give you that impression. We experience being loved by God. We don't. God isn't an object that we can see, touch, taste, directly perceive. But what we do perceive is the effect of God upon us. We're like a tiger, and we can sniff the prey. We don't know what, we're on the scent. We're reaching for who is God, what is God. But there's something in us that's calling us and drawing us, and it's a being loved experience, as I've tried to share with you. It's also a being drawn into love. It's being drawn to respond. It's being drawn to dare. It's sometimes the hound of heaven. You read poetry through all cultures. Won't let you go. It's something that drives you and draws you into a journey. And so we are, let me put it simply, we, Peter, Andrew, James, John, Judas, every human being in this world, I think it can be said, are seeking, whether we know it or not, the one who is drawing us in these deepest experiences that we are having all the time, if we would attend to them. And now if I can hold your attention, take it even a step further. When God, the one we call God, and that's only a name, you appreciate that, of course. We don't know God, we're coming to know the mystery. But when the one whom we hook that name onto, when God draws you into what we call religious experience, and just remember and check this. Two things are happening. Like all love, you're being drawn into communion. Yes, the presence of the lover is there for you. Like the little baby's conscious of the smell and the feel and the warmth, but it's not able to put words on it yet. And that's mum or dad or big sister that they got used to or whatever. So we're drawn into the presence of God, but there's more to it than that for us, isn't there? We are not only in the presence, but there's a revelation taking place, a removal of the veil. We can call it, and some people do call it, please check it for yourself, an inner word. A kind of a... Because God, the one calling you, is drawing you to respond as well. He's drawing you in directions in your life. He's drawing you with meanings and values that can inform and enrich your life. He's revealing possibilities to you. And that inner communication is about action and about decisions and about lifestyle, and it comes as an inner word. It is both creative, drawing you onwards, and it's a healing word that comes down and consoles and heals and forgives and somehow encourages. It's a love experience, but it's a love experience that has direction and meaning, and in which there is a revelation of truth, inner truth to you. What happens in this experience, which I'll only stay with for a little longer, is, I suppose, what happens in any love experience. When someone loves you, if you can recall wondering whether someone loves you and then knowing that person did, then when you knew, something happened, a horizon opened up. Everything looks different, doesn't it? Everything smells different, everything tastes different, there's a different, you step differently, and you see things you hadn't seen before. It just opens up, it's like as though you've taken a whole new set of glasses on, or you've opened up a whole new horizon, and the things that were there before are seen within a different perspective. So it is with the experience that I'm trying to touch here, which is, I believe, is at the heart of everybody, and I'll link it with Jesus in a moment. When we are moved, every human being, is moved in this religious way, the love that's there opens us to see life differently. And the word that we use in religious language for what happens is faith. It's called by some people the eye of love. It's what love enables you to see. And when you trust your wife, you see things you didn't see before, or your husband, or the child in front of you, or the teacher, or the mother, or the friend, or the priest, or whoever it may be. You see things, you believe, you put your faith in that person, then things happen. When we put our faith in this inner journey, I'm using the word inner, I don't know what else to say, in this healing love, this religious experience, when we don't put it away or ignore it or run from it or distract ourselves from it or live so superficially we never get where we are to taste it or experience it, then faith is trusting that experience and that journey and that moment and remembering it and relishing it. And what that opens up about life is what we call faith. It's our response to the revelation of the lover whom we put a name on, the ultimate lover, the one who is at the heart of the world and creation, the one we call God.